I propose. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the October 25th SECCOM meeting. And we can begin. I think we've got sort of slim today, but that's okay. Okay. Bob, do you know if Mudassar is joining today?
He probably
It's a little
is.
Early for him.
He seems to get in a few minutes. After we get started.
That's fine.
It's early for me too.
It's early for me. I'm like, who is this person getting up this early in the morning? Okay. So I'm covering for Pavel today as he is in Bari, Italy, enjoying himself, I trust.
Nice.
All right, so we'll circle back. Bob, let's talk about, can you give us an update on what's going on with logging, please?
Everything, anything.
Okay, well, excellent.
So the Python proof of concept is going as expected slowly. Just trying to understand how to get some fields that are in the list there, and then figuring out who we're going to work with to integrate it. Last week we talked with VJ at his project meeting, and there was pushback from him. He was really insisting that we work through integration, and which I thought is a bit of a challenge since there's an integration PTL. But he had reassured that there was, the committers are pretty active, and so I could probably work with them. So I just need to somehow get in touch with them, which I haven't set up yet, but it's on my to-do list. The other item I wanted to talk about is the Java global requirement.
Yes.
And so as you saw last night, I sent email out to you, Byung, and it was getting quite a bit of pushback from Fiacra and VJ, and really just the scale of work that they might have to do if they have to do another logging implementation, logging implementation. And so I'm very sensitive to that. And so I went back and really looked at the fields that we had. When I initially had set these fields up, these fields aren't new. They're really just, they are a subset of what's being logged in EELF and also logging analytics, which makes sense because logging analytics was implementing what EELF was implementing. I thought, well, we already have these fields. Perhaps if people have already implemented these two log, one or both of these logging implementations, they probably could be already compliant with this proposed global requirement.
And you said this is for logging or the original logging project or ELF?
Yeah, logging, EELF, or the, which is the eComp logging. Right. That's not what the E stands for in EELF, but it's what
we'll just go with it. eComp makes total sense to me.
And then the other is like the logging analytics is the repo name, or on the wiki it's referred to as logging.
Yes, it was logging. Yes, yes.
You're seeing the Elastic, the Rockstash, and the framework something, and then they add the E, so it comes, I think. That's my understanding.
Yeah. So I was doing so my thought was, well, we still have the issue of ordering, issue of normalizing the naming of the fields, log fields themselves, because they're different. And I did some digging through the Fluidbit documentation last night, and it appears with the parsers we are able to it's just part of the parser. When you define the parser to ingest these log formats, which we would have to define anyway, because these aren't one of the native formats that Fluentbit ingests. We can rename the fields there, right? So we can normalize.
So you can do it within Fluentbit.
Yes. And so that's what I meant by normalize. So it's when you define the parser. In this case, we have to define the parser through regex. And then as part of that, in the regular expression itself is where you can name the fields. And so we can normalize it there. And so that would take care of the ordering, because in ELF, the log format is position dependent upon on the log type, which again we can handle because we have the log type and we can just write a parser for those specific log types.
Interesting.
And do the mapping that way. And then the logging analytics is a name value pair. So it's key equals value. And again, it's be a regular expression, and
read it back to you. This is a very straightforward parsing exercise. That
yes.
One thing is, we know the front bit capability of the parser, and then using regular expression, and we can normalize there. The thing is, looking at the CPS, using their log back pattern, they can centralize it based on CPS case. They can normalize there, using the log back pattern. This pattern. So, looking at the CPS code, I mean, they can rename, change, because the contents of log, right? Contents of log is application specific, but like timestamp, severity, and then some of those things, they can extract some centrally. So the reason I'm saying is Fluentbit can do that, but problem is if each application can do normalize, and it's much less work for Fluentbit, but otherwise, every application have different format or the name and sequence. Then Fluentbit is not just based on the application. They understand the source of the log, and they have to apply different regular expression, different parser.
And they have to know which project.
Yes,
it's coming
that's the
from.
Complication, okay. Because the SO they generate this way, and ST is generated this way. Fluentbit, they have to know it's coming from SO. Otherwise, they don't know what to do. They have a capability, but as a collection agent, we have to more work to do. I mean, it's doable, but in doing proof of concept, we sense that. So that's why, we didn't use too much parsing exercise because it's going to be very hectic. So anyway, but technically, it can be done.
I think this is the compromise that we have to make, because number one, the PTLs are sort of on skeleton crews, and so some of them may be faced with just almost just focusing completely on logging on one release. I don't think it's really the best thing, since there's an alternative, and some of the issues that you'd raise can be addressed with some documentation. And the other part is, when end users are using ONAP, they're not taking it lock, stock, and barrel, right? I mean, they're picking pieces here and there, so they're already assuming there's some work that needs to go in to getting it up and running and taking the particular pieces that they want, and integrating into the environment. And I think if there is just some good documentation that sort of documents where the formats, the logs are being outputted for the different containers, I think that would be, and even if there was a pattern that was generated that they could bring into Flubin, that might be enough. And I think that might be that's an okay compromise. And I think that'll address anyone's concerns in terms of moving this forward as a global requirement.
And it's actually a global requirement to the whoever configure front bit. Because application, we basically allow the application team, they don't need to do anything.
So
I lost you guys, I'm sorry.
The global requirement said you have to generate this field, yellow, the green field, in your document. So if application PTS said we're not gonna do anything, then we put the global requirement for the front bit configuration, right? That's why there's a compromise, right? PTR, you don't have to worry about it, and we take it.
Yeah, so I miss a lot of what you said there, Byung, because my audio just went haywire.
Oh, sorry.
No, it was on my end. I think what I heard was that we're forcing this as a global requirement for Flubin, and no, still the global requirement is still a PTL requirement. It's and the at the end of the day, what we want to accomplish is that logs have this set of data in it,
mm-hmm.
right? And ELF has this data in it, and logging analytics has this data in it. For projects that didn't implement any logging, or either of those logging, they're going to have to implement something like what CPS did to have those fields in there. But at the end of the day, we said that we need to have these fields in here for security analytics, right? The green fields, mm-hmm. and then along with the yellow fields. But again, the yellow fields is something that's going to be addressed in the logging architecture.
Yeah, front bit anyway. So.
Real quick question, do you want the green and the yellow fields included in the minutes for this meeting? If so, can you send me something? Otherwise, we're okay. We don't need it.
I can send them. I'll put a link to them in the meeting page for the notes.
Okay. I think they're on another so let me just put that in here.
So That's my proposal to move forward global requirements.
So just a minute. So all right, just one second. That's one place. So what exactly is your recommendation? Do you think we should proceed with the global requirement? Is there too much pushback for the global requirement?
If the requirement is written such that if people have implemented ELF and logging analytics, they're compliant. They'll be in compliance with the global requirement. Otherwise, they'll have to do an log back implementation for the fields that have been specified. If we put it in that way, I don't think there'll be any pushback. Okay. If we feel strongly that is not what we should do in terms of going forward with logging, and that we should ask that there needs to be a standardization of format of those logging fields, that is, I think we are going to get some pushback from Fiocra and VJ on that, from the amount of workload. And there's just some questions about in terms of sort of impact for them to do that and how it affects their existing logging, which I just can't answer without a lot of study. And so I'm afraid, I don't want to saddle the teams with that requirement until we can fully understand that impact. And I don't think we can do that. I don't think we can do that study within the time frame that we have for London.
So,
but when I stood back for a moment and looked at our options, and really what we're trying to do is that we're just trying to guarantee that there's these data fields part of the logs, and those data fields are in those other logs. And so that's with that vantage point, that's why I am proposing this approach with that some of these things could be handled in FluentBit and with some documentation to go along with it.
Okay, so I'm showing you right now what the requirement is for London. Use standardized logging fields in all ONAP Java components. And there's a description of the use case. Do you need to add something to this? Because it doesn't tell them how to do it. Do you need more? Do you need to update this requirement somehow with the information on how to do it, or you know, or what the options are?
Yes,
the standardized security logging fields. And that's what the requirement should read. Use standardized security logging fields.
Oh, do you want it to be updated to security?
That's the new requirement, is add the security fields. Almost everything has logging already. We want them to add security fields.
Okay, so now I've fixed it to that.
I thought we generalized when we Bob designed the green field and yellow field. Initially we started as security, but we generalized. That's why we don't have a security logging field. Another question is about in your green field, the last the attribute is the log message. That's the application specific log message. So that's we don't control, because whatever they currently generate the log, we take it as a log message. What we are trying to do is we have some field like timestamp, log level, trace ID, status, principal ID, and service name. Those things we try to add additionally. Some of them they already generate through the ELF, and so we just renaming the field. So the log message itself, I don't think we change it, right? We don't have requirement to an application. They have to change their current log message. We just care about the additional the field, right?
Standard field. That's right. Yeah, that's right. So we can, like, the logging metadata or event attributes, whatever sort of name you're used to using for the data that gets sort of added to the logging message that the developer or the application is generating.
So I think the PTA worry about, you know, maybe they worry about the current log message structure they have to change, but that's not the case. We adding, you know, this field in addition to the log message they have to generate. But anyway, so like a process ID coming from PID, you know, those things you can give, you know, and then put a service name. So, you know, they came from Spring application name, and principal ID, username. So if they have already field and they can generate, I don't know what's the impact. We have to understand the Fiacra, what's the impact really? Because we're not asking to change log message itself. We're asking to add, tweaking
Yeah, you're asking to make sure that the standard fields, which probably have been standard fields from the beginning, are there. So my question here is, do we remove the words? This is just very process oriented. Do we leave the word security, or do we remove it? Bob?
I'm not even sure why we are asking this question. Like, why is this?
Because I just want to make sure that I have the requirement, the description of the requirement correctly. Correct. That's the only reason.
I don't know. I'm gonna go back
to the original.
We specifically generalize this log field. Initially, we start from the security, but later on, you know, it's not just for security; it's for, you know, other purpose too. But anyway, it's up to you guys. Okay.
Yeah, I'm good. Going back to the original. I don't have an opinion. I was just trying to make sure that I was capturing what you had, what you wanted to do.
I think, in my opinion, requirement itself is fine, but you know, I think Bob, you have pushback from PT how to implement, you know, because of workload. So that's why you try to you know, find another way to fulfill this requirement, right? Using front bit, so PTL, you know, let PTL going easy. Is that right? Right.
Yes.
So I'm kind of
insensitive.
I'm kind of confused by Vijay, since I gave him somebody to implement this, but that's okay. And I'll talk to Bert and find out what progress.
Well, it was. Making. I think it was more of it was more Fiacra that was giving the pushback. Vijay had made some comments, but it was mostly Fiacra.
Sure.
I think the pushback was really, okay, who has to do the work, basically.
Yeah, yes.
I think it was like PTSD, because he was just like, I went through this already with trying to get everything over to the ELF. Did a lot of work. I didn't really see why we need to do it. Now you want us to do more logging stuff.
I think the requirement itself is fine to me, just how to implement. Okay. That's the issue from my side, right? So, I mean, if they cannot do it, and can, you know, maybe you can do from the front bit, that's, we'll see. But I think the requirement itself, you need this field for security and others. I think that we discussed, and you, Bob, you talked to TSC, you talked to PT. I think the requirement itself to me is fine, but we'll see. But how I'm gonna check with the Fiacra, so see what's the issue.
Fiacra was bringing was like, just why can't you know, Fiacra's question is, why can't we just have the logback XML to be inherited from some global O parent thing? And I didn't really understand some of the tech he was talking about. And sort of my response is like, well, that's not the way everyone's been implementing logging. Why should we start now?
Let me try to understand what Fiacra, you know, we are working for the same company. So anyway, we have CPS, the example done by Ericsson team too. So let me see what is, you know, the issues, you know, it could be. But anyway, the bottom line is, if they cannot do it, the front B can, you know, handle this way. But as you study, Bob, so. Yeah, we can discuss, but this like little complicate the front bit configuration, but we'll see. Okay.
So I want to understand. So we are right now, we presented to the requirements subcommittee that it be a global requirement to update the fields for Java. I'd like to get that presented. Pavel and I want to get that presented to the TSC on Thursday. Can we leave that in there? And, you know, if projects don't finish it, well, they don't finish it. Should we back off of it being a global requirement? I would prefer not to, because it's just gonna get kicked down the road. Logging has gotten kicked down the road for years now, because the logging team essentially said, we're done, and walked away for the logging project. Mm-hmm. So, we had an unmaintained logging project. We needed to do something about it. So
what I would suggest, Amy, is you know, part of this, I wanted to keep using the word compromise, but I don't think it's quite the right word. That part of this coming up with this different, you know, pushing some of the burden onto the logging architecture is one is to sort of grease the wheels with the PTLs to kind of to get this in. what we have today in logging is that there are projects that are logging. They're just using different formats. But the fields that we've put together that we've specified that will support security analytics downstream, they're present today for the projects that are logging either EELF or logging analytics. Those fields are present today. And by putting forward this global requirement, saying that will take care of some of the, you know, the normalization and the logging architecture, it will, for the projects that aren't doing logging or projects that are logging but aren't logging these fields because they didn't adhere to those specifications, those existing specifications, they will have to implement logging. This will improve the situation, right? So this global requirement with the new proposal, it will improve the situation. And so that's what I'm looking at. And so I was looking at either we go nowhere or we do an incremental improvement.
To me, there's two things, right? One is talking about log content we talked about here. The other one is the log architecture. So, Amy, you said the whatever we had in the log framework, that's obsolete, the unmaintained project. So that's why we created a new architecture using the, you know, the separation, the generation collection. So generation is they just require to, application required to generate the, you know, log through the standard or standard error. And the collection, you know, for front build, front D, and then Elasticsearch, and you know, the visualization. That's the different one. So this new architecture will replace the current the outdated log framework. So once this is done, the old log framework will be obsolete and then replaced by this. But that's the you know the pipeline. And this one now we're talking about the. How they generate the normalized log from application, that's still pending. So if application cannot do it, then front bit, you know, need to put the parser. That's the, you know, that's the mechanic. So.
Okay, because-
So with that, sorry, Amy, let me get to this. So with that, I think we can move forward. Amy, I think you can move forward with this, presenting this to the TSC. And Byung, if you could talk with Fiacra.
Okay.
And maybe there are some things that were sort of, maybe you can address his concerns better than, because I felt like I couldn't really address some of the concerns he was raising just from a back, because of the lack of background for me. And so maybe, you know, so based upon that conversation, it maybe you'll come back and say, yeah, Fiacra's cool. And we can just, people can just implement, make updates to their logback files. Cause I felt like that's all we needed to do. Yeah. And then we'll take that approach. Otherwise we have this alternative approach. So we should be able to move forward with the
global requirement. We can move forward. The reason the currently, I mean, you put the Java application because so according to CPS, they're using a Spring property. So, you know, and also you're going to a Java. That's why Python, they're using different way. So yes. That's why, you know, the Bob and team doing POC, but the Java, they already know how to do it. And then, so that's why we tried to ask them to. Anyway, I'll talk to Piakura. You know, maybe he has some other reason. And, you know, everyone is busy. So we'll see, you know, the logging is deep. Tend to put low priority. So,
I totally get that. It's just that, you know, you have to have logging.
Yeah,
I think it's important moving forward, you know, with the new versions to definitely include that.
So, so I just want to calibrate language, Amy. We have, UNAP has logging, right? It's just when this global requirements to make sure that everyone, you know, everything has logging. So right now there's some logging.
So that's why I said, that's why I said projects using logging or EELF have the mandatory fields. You know, the CPS logback pattern, you have two choices. You can either use FluentBit or CPS to normalize these names. I think I've captured everything. What else do I need to capture?
I'm just looking at the bullets here. Yeah, I think that's good capture.
Okay, great.
And yeah, I'll send you that link after the meeting.
That'd be great. Thank you so much. All right, Mudassar, I'm going to turn it over.
I'm sorry, the link is in the requirement you were looking at earlier.
Oh, good.
That's the link.
Oh, well, let me pull it out. Well, that makes one less thing for all of us to do. Specifically, I don't have to remember to add something. There. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So, Mudassar, I assigned you two topics. Can you cover what happened in the unmaintained meeting? We had a long discussion there. And actually, I'm going to set you up for this, which is basically going from the list of Docker or the list of container images to repo is a little bit of an unknown right now. I think, Mudassar, I think that that's kind of where we ended yesterday, correct?
Yeah, so.
But I want you to recap, just.
So basically, when we run a report on images, we'll see some images haven't been updated for a long time. But when we want to go and say, all right, who uses this image, who creates this image, that backward tracing is nested in the JJB, the Jenkins jobs. It's not a report you can run and easily find out. So you're going to have to trace for the project's job to figure out which code repo is producing the particular image. So that's what we're trying to solve. So I did put a URL in the chat or in the Zoom chat.
Is this the one that's tagging one or
yep.
is it a different
yeah.
one?
Okay, great. No, it's the same. So basically, there is capability to add attributes to repos and images within the Nexus software. I think it's called Repository Manager Pro or Repository Pro. This allows you to tag anywhere, anything. And then you can just run the reports off of those tags. So that, I think if they implement that, hopefully that will solve our problem, at least with the next release when something gets pushed, we'll have those tags to look at. The other part was when you're creating an image, I think the image itself within the Docker file can have information. So that's another possibility to track this back to the right repo.
Say
I had a
again
long
about...
discussion.
Go.
I had a long discussion with Vijay yesterday afternoon about where the names come from that are used for the images and ways that we could track them down. And it boils down to two possibilities. One is the POM files have the container name in them, or in certain cases, like some of the multi-image repos, there's information in the JJB file for that repo. And so if we could potentially build up a list based on the information in all the POM files, POM.xml files, and the information in the JJB build files, and figure out what that forward relationship is. And then use that information to, okay, given an image name, what was it that built it? And what other images also came from the same repo. So it is doable based on static information. Another strategy that could be used is to look at the Jenkins build files, and in the logs themselves, it actually, the log file for building any given repo will have the information that indicates the image that was built by that, when that repo was built. So it's a couple different strategies that could give us the entire set of information.
How difficult would it be to keep those current?
Well, the information in the POM files is always current. I'm so not sure I understand this, your question.
So my question is, if you built this up, how would it stay? Is this kind of like a, I guess here's my question. Would this be done manually? And so it would be great for London, but then if stuff changed, you wouldn't have the right, you wouldn't have the right information for Montreal? Or is this
whenever a POM file gets modified or added or deleted, the list will change. If the JJB files in the CI management repo, those are all in the CI management repo, by the way. If the container names found in there were to change, they would obviously, the list would change.
So this, but this list could be generated automatically. Like you could write a script to go in there and pull the stuff out and do the mapping, and then it could be run for each release, or you know, however often you need to run it.
I think it's doable.
Okay, that's really cool.
But I think that we're forgetting a fundamental problem, right? We need to improve the CI process. So this question shouldn't be asked: how do we dig this information out? Information is needed, and we're not tagging the images. So it shouldn't be a forensic root cause analysis to find out where this image came from. I think the CI can be improved, and that's, we should seek the permanent solution rather than, you know, how much digging in three different places.
So to fix the root problem, who has to do the work and how much work is it?
I think adding tags to repos, wherever you store, adding tags is a minimal work. It's basically drop down menu where you can create name of the tag and associate repos and files and whatnot with those tags. That way, then you can just do a search on simply looking at the search facility within Nexus. Because I like Tony's ideas. Yeah, we can solve that problem, but every release, we won't be sure which POM is changed or not changed. And we're going to have to run the same process again, and that will be time consuming.
Well, but Tony said that this could be scripted, so that you write the script once, you automate it, so you just, you know, periodically run that script, and it generates the new one. So if I understood what you're saying, it's not terribly time consuming.
Yes, it can be. If we had the script to do it, it could be done automatically as part of the build process or integration process. It could be another Jenkins job, essentially. But I like the idea of tagging. I don't like the idea of having to do some manual step on the repo to force this to happen, because that if you had a repo, you have the same problem. Or if you and nobody goes in and tags the new repo, you're missing tags. But that does bring up the possibility of if the Jenkins job itself were to, they know the name of their repo as an environment variable that can be accessed within the scripts. And if something could be added, something tagging could occur based on that. Maybe the scripts can be modified to add that tagging.
Yeah, that's what I was concerned about, the tagging not being maintained. That's my biggest concern. Because I do like that idea of just making a tagging instead of.
Or they can generate in a short README file when they generate image, and it puts pertinent information, just like we've been doing with POM stuff, right? Just as part of the Docker compose command when you create the image. Second command can come in, echo XYZ, and put it in a README file at the same location. We can solve that problem too.
Hey, Tony, this is Bob. I have a question. When I was going through the documentation for DCAE, I noticed on docs that there's a table with that has repos, DCAE repos, and then containers associated to those repos. Do you know how that table was generated? Was that done manually?
It's probably updated manually by Vijay every release.
Okay.
DCAE has been very systematic in the way it's named the containers, or it's tried to be at least. I don't know if they've been totally successful, but and also the release files, which every repo is updated to have for containers that have been built for a given release, have the container name in them. And we have a tool that actually verifies the release files and make sure that the container name that's listed actually came out of a POM file.
Yeah, either the POM file or the JJB, because it wouldn't be in the POM file if you have a multi-image repo, right, Tony? Did I understand that?
So, yeah. No, the program file, the program that we have actually finds the name in, it's usually a sub POM file.
I see.
So it actually searches through the POM files and until it finds the one that has the match.
So if I'm listening to this, I think that, you know, the tagging is great, but you got to have something that double checks that the tagging happened. I think reading back, I think that's what I'm hearing, because you can't count on anybody putting the tags in. You can't count on the tagging happening because it's a manual process. You can count on the POM files or the JJBs being correct, because otherwise it won't build correctly. So ideally we should use tagging, but you always need to check and either tell somebody to get something done or do it automatically. I'm not sure exactly how to proceed on that. But I think what I'm hearing is we actually need to find a resource who could potentially write this script. Is that correct?
Write a modification to the build files that adds the tagging automatically.
Right. And that would add the tagging to the repo automatically?
I think you should be able to do that through their sort of CLI. When you create a repo, you only have to do it once, right? And then those DAGs will stay with the repo.
No, because they could add something, another container, another thing that generates another container to that repo throughout its life.
But I think that's the whole point, right? You're tracing back to the parent object, to the repo itself.
Okay.
So I think we got two problems to solve, right? One, we basically going through these unmaintained containers, and that could be this one-time effort that we can dig the information and get it out of the way. The other part is really, it's an elephant IT issue where they need to improve the pipeline so the information stays with it. There's a backward traceability where software components came from. And that could be, I think the tagging is one solution, but it could be something within the Jenkins jobs that keeps the information to any child objects that it creates. So there's the traceability with the parent object.
So I can confirm that the Jenkins job definitely knows what repo was used to pull things out of. And if we could somehow take advantage of that information and plug it into wherever the Docker image is created to add a tag to it.
Yes.
That should be a straightforward modification. So somewhere there is a Docker command in those scripts.
Yeah, it has to be compose. That's the one that creates the image.
Okay. And I'm assuming that this tagging is something that can be done using an option on that command.
Yeah, or it could be within.
Or added to it afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, there's two ways, right? One, you could do it in the compose structure, or if you don't want to touch that, most places when you go to a file server, there'll be a description of that executable or image, and that's readme.txt for that. So you can just throw a lot of information there and generate it automatically through the Jenkins jobs. And I think Elephant IT can find maybe whatever work easy and work for them to convey that information. Or image names can be more URI oriented, that can have parent repo, sub repo, nomenclature included in there.
Well, we know that the names of those images are stored in the pom.xml files, mostly, all over the place. So standardizing the image names is something that would require a lot of changes to a lot of files.
Yeah, and I think that will have huge pushback.
But modifying one or two build scripts that create these Docker images to add a tag after it's executed, I think that's something we could easily work with the folks in IT, Jessica or whomever, to accomplish.
So do we have next steps on this? Should we set up something with Jessica?
I believe she's being invited to the next week's meeting.
Excellent. So let's bring that up with her, because what I'm thinking is, you know, we got a lot of pushback on this because, you know, when we looked at this, it's like, oh, well, we're looking at images, not at the unmaintained repos. So to me, the most important thing is, number one, to stop generating containers that are, or to stop generating images of things that are no longer needed in ONAP. I mean, that's where I'm getting to. So to be honest, you can do that by updating. What the projects should do, or LFIT, probably the projects, is you give them a list of containers that images that, hey, you have not touched this in like forever. And they either change something in they either remove something from a JJB or from a POM. And then that image stops being generated. Is that correct?
That's one of the steps it needs doing.
So that's one of the steps it needs doing. That solves the immediate problem that I stop putting unused containers. I stop putting unused images in a release. But we're looking to, hey, I want to get to the point where I can mark stuff as, mark a repo as unmaintained. Where it's a one-to-one mapping, where a repo generates a single container, then that's easy. That's this POM step. The problem is where I have a multi-image repo. Some of the images may no longer be needed. Some of them are needed. So that's a much more difficult thing to map, to mark a repo as unmaintained, correct? Because the repo itself may have keep having changes to it. It's just that there's pieces of that repo that aren't. Yep. As I'm trying to understand the problem we're trying to solve. Ultimately, we want to maintain that all the images that are generated by the build are actually needed by the ONAP release. So is there something about the list that we currently generate of the dockers that is not giving us the information we need to at least address that problem?
So there's the current images that don't have that information in them, and then there will be new images coming out in the future that we would want that information to be added to automatically. So the next release, when we generate that list of unmaintained projects, we can say, and that came from project X. And we can start the ball rolling with project X.
Okay.
I don't think I'm simplifying it too much.
No, I don't think so at all. Thanks.
I think I'm agreeing with everything that's been
said. I think you absolutely are. Yeah, no question. So I guess that what we have here is the next step is Jessica's going to be at the next unmaintained call, and we can talk to her whatever time that's occurring next week, since we're in no man's land next week. So we can
next
talk
week's
to her.
Meeting. Yeah, next week's meeting for those who are in the U.S. will be at the same time.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, for those who are in Europe or any other places that start daylight savings time this coming weekend, it will change.
Will it be 1 hour earlier or later?
Fall back.
So it'll be 1 hour earlier? No, earlier. It'll be 1 hour earlier?
Later, we'll gain an hour.
Later, because I don't know.
I just tell it to you. And Outlook tells me when the meeting.
That's how I work.
If your the following kids week, come the back PTO from meeting. Bus stop, you will figure it out. Yeah.
So the following week in my Outlook calendar, the PTO meeting, which has been at 10 o'clock Eastern all summer, will be at 9 o'clock.
Okay, so then for Europe, this will be 1 hour earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Perfect. Thank you.
I think no matter how you explain, it's a privilege to miss that one morning meeting when the time changes.
Exactly.
You can do something else.
I really believe that with the new global economy in elementary school, there should be every year they should work on time zones and calculating what happens to time zones and what happens, because no one really knows how to do it very well. And we all now are relying on Outlook. And it seems like one of those things that everyone should understand, because you're going to spend the rest of your adult life trying to sort through time zones.
Especially now. Yeah,
exactly. So, yeah. Okay. We are at the top of the hour.
We never got to my topic that I wanted to bring up today.
Oh no.
I sent an email last night or yesterday late afternoon.
The security assessment questionnaire and the Garrett reviews, I put both of those in because I assumed we'd get through these others really fast.
Yeah. So 30 seconds, DCAE finished doing a security, or finished filling out the security questionnaire. And we need to decide how we're going to go about scoring it and what the next steps are.
Is that posted? If you, I'm sure you did.
It's in the wiki. It's in, and a pointer to it's in the email I sent last night.
Yes, right. And it's in, and this is the link to it from the that Tony sent. So I'm gonna I'll try and get this posted today.
Yeah, we'll try to figure it out. Because I think one of the reasons I was opposed to allowing free flow statements as a response was this hard part of grading them.
Mm-hmm. I think it's purely subjective on our part.
Yeah.
All grading is subjective.
That's okay.
We just have to figure out that we're using the same measurement for all the projects. That's all.
We're just going to,
it's an assessment.
Exactly.
Now, I'd be happy if, we gave A, B, C, D.
Yep.
Something
that's
like
where
that.
That's where I'm at on it. It's good. Yeah, I like A, B, C kind of. You're good. You're bad. You're good. You're okay. Or you need work.
Yeah. And then average them out at the end and come up with an overall score. But the biggest outcome of the assessment is for the PTL to understand where they need work.
Cool. We'll take a look. Thank you.
Okay.
One thing I did want to bring up here is there was a discussion yesterday, I think, in the PTL call about the LFN DTF. And apparently day one is going to be plenary and day two is just ONAP specific. So we're going to be submitting the London security requirements, which are, there's three slides in this. Some of you already seen them. We're going to be submitting that. But for the plenary, they're going to go through, I think they wanted kind of one submission per major project out of LFN. So Maggie and Tony, I know you were going to do the productization of assured open source software. That was your topic, right? And then Mudassar, you were going to submit the SBOM implementation and challenges in ONAP, which is, I think, also, I mean, these are both really important to me. These are both very important topics for to bring up to the plenary.
Mm-hmm.
Just a real quick thing. Is there a way of rolling them together? I know this is due fairly soon.
So my I can move it. I already posted mine. I think I thought
it, I thought it, you were going to put it as a plenary topic.
Yeah. So I'm going to do that today. It's due tomorrow for all the plenary topics. So anything that needs to be changed, submitted. Wednesday was the deadline for it. And for the second day submission per project, Friday is the deadline.
Right. And so I'm going to get the London requirements submitted.
Amy, can you hear me?
Yeah.
For day two, I put that the architecture update, ONAP architecture update, including security logging and other modularization. And also I talked to Andres, and I think we tried to do something about the service mesh. I like just similar to he proposed to here. And then we tried adding combined ACOM and SACOM together or separately. I already proposed architecture update, and we are thinking about ONAP service mesh.
That's great. Okay. With that, we're 4 minutes over. Tony, thanks so much for poking me about the security questionnaire template. I think I will try and remember, I will ask Pavel to put you first for next week, because I think it's really important that we get through this next week and start thinking about scoring.
Thank you.
Very sorry, I missed the conversation. Sorry, I joined late. Just a very quick one on the logging. I was chatting to Byung offline, but there's no pushback from DMAP in terms of the plan going forward. Just to clarify,
awesome.
maybe my our discussion yesterday, Bob, maybe I came across negatively, but it was just a question around the log back XML configuration, but no, there's no pushback from DMAP at all. So.
I was busy chatting with him about it.
I know we're way over. So, but yeah,
he wants to focus how to do it. That's what he worried about. That's all.
Yeah, and I think that the how to do it I completely agree with you about the how to do it. I mean, you gotta have that because otherwise it's just it's once again, somebody threw something over the wall for you to do, and you don't know, and without any advice. So
just to clarify, maybe our chat yesterday on the PTL call may have come across negatively, but not just to clarify, not the case. So just
one thing is for Plan B. Over time, but one thing is the Plan B. Doing the normalization at the front bit. Since we don't have resources to contribute to London yet, I'm still trying to find it. But if we don't, and if front bit is not updated, then this global requirement will not be fulfilled because application they rely on the front bit. Then the London is not going to happen, right? That's my concern. So that's all. Okay.
Okay. We've got minutes here. This was the agenda. So like I said, I'll get this posted today or tomorrow and we can move on. I appreciate everybody's staying over for almost 10 minutes. And with that, I really hope I started that I recorded this.
It's recording.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Thank you.